welcome to UN Gender Focus. I'm Matt Wells at the United Nations headquarters in New York. Coming up in this week's programme, bearing the brunt of war in northern Uganda, women now need access to justice and their basic rights. And in Myanmar, we'll hear how women are trying to heal decades of ethnic tension and bonding through learning how to read and write. But first, deploying more women to peacekeeping operations will help boost the protection of civilians and reduce the chances of sexual exploitation and abuse, the UN chief has urged. Antonio Guterres was speaking via video link to chiefs of defence and senior military officials attending a conference at UN headquarters in New York. The meeting is part of a wider process to improve the overall performance of UN peacekeeping missions. Jocelyn Sambira has more.
The Chiefs of Defense Conference began by marking a moment of silence in honor of fallen peacekeepers. More than 100 member states were represented, along with military representatives from the African Union, the European Union, and the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, NATO. Force commanders from UN peacekeeping missions in Mali, Central African Republic, South Sudan, and the Democratic Republic of the Congo, DRC, were also present. In his opening address, UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres spoke directly to the chiefs of defense, thanking them for their commitment to UN peacekeeping.
Across the globe, armed conflict scars countless civilians and destabilizes entire regions. UN Blue Helmets brave danger so others can enjoy safety. And the men and women serving in peacekeeping deserve our gratitude.
Mr. Guterres welcomed the focus on gender, recalling that the Chiefs of Defense role is critical to ensuring that peacekeeping remains modern and efficient.
I welcome your focus on gender, with a view to increasing the number of female peacekeepers and integrating a gender perspective into our peace and security actions. When we have greater gender balance in our forces, we boost our protection outreach and we reduce the chances of sexual exploitation and abuse. I urge actions to deploy more women and to help integrate a gender-sensitive perspective in fostering peace.
Echoing this view, the head of UN peacekeeping, Jean-Pierre Lacroix, said the scourge of sexual exploitation and abuse has greatly undermined the organization. He called on the chiefs of defense to improve the screening of their troops and strengthen accountability measures.
Our operations, as I said earlier, have been brutally undermined by the despicable acts of a few. The success of our missions depend upon the confidence and trust placed to us by the populations we serve. When this trust is broken, our credibility is damaged. I call upon you to put in place the checks and balances required to ensure that you deploy only those with impeccable backgrounds and take rigorous and consistent measures to render those responsible accountable for their acts.
Mr. Lacroix added that his department's goal was to have 15% of its senior officer positions filled by women by the end of this year. He called it a modest goal, but said he was confident he would reach it and build upon it with the help of the chiefs of defense. Jocelyn Sambira, United Nations.
Women in northern Uganda who've borne the brunt of a 20-year war now need full access to justice and their basic rights for society to make a full recovery. That's the view of Uganda's Chief Justice, Bart Magunda Katuibe, speaking at a high-level meeting on women's access to justice here at UN headquarters in New York. He explained that while the Constitution protects women, Parliament needed to put laws in place to make those provisions operational. He noted that women and girls needed legal pathways to create an avenue for stability and eventually for peace. Liz Kafidi asked the Chief Justice about the challenges women are facing in the region.
We have had a region of Uganda which had a long period of instability, a long period of war, 20 years, and we want to address why it is very important for women and girls in northern Uganda to access justice as a way of stabilizing the region.
And why is that?
First of all, they have borne the brunt of the war. People were captured and forced into sexual slavery and married off by rebels. People who are raped lost their children, their husbands and so on, and they are still bearing the brunt of settling down. So we think that in the process of settling down and reestablishing peace, if you get the women to stabilize and open them channels where they can complain if they have issues with the law, then you create that avenue for stability and eventually for peace.
Are there any laws to protect women now?
The Constitution guarantees equality of both men and women before the law and demands that all laws and customs and traditions that work against the dignity of women are prohibited. So the challenge is to Parliament to put in place the necessary laws to operationalize the provisions of the Constitution. For example, Parliament passed a law against the female genital mutilation. We have had a law which now allows women to have full equality with men with regard to ownership of property, so that the husband cannot just go and sell property without consulting the wife if that's the property over which the family gains sustenance. Yes, there is some progress being made in that field.
Is it difficult to implement those laws?
The government is really committed, and this is happening now.
You do see progress being made?
Yes, I think there is some progress being made. It's slow. People are just coming out of the war. They haven't quite settled down. They have been living in internally displaced camps. They are now beginning to go back to their homes. There are still people with scars of the war, people whose lips were cut, children who have been traumatized. But we can see that people are beginning to settle down, and we can see more and more disputes being taken to the police, more and more disputes being taken to the courts of law. So we think if we can build on that and give the women that sense of stability, we can hope that the rest of society will stabilize.
Is there anything else you would like to add?
We believe if more and more women get to understand their rights, then we will be on the road to full recovery.
Chief Justice Bart Magunda Katuribe talking to Liz Scafidi. Well, women belonging to different religious minorities in the restive Rakhine state in Myanmar are mending fences as they learn to read, write and sew, the UN said. The project, supported by the UN Refugee Agency, UNHCR, promotes peaceful coexistence through vocational training classes. It's based in the town of Mung Dor, where Rohingya Muslims reportedly suffered a brutal crackdown at the hands of the local police. Here's Jocelyn Sambira.
The Rohingya Muslim minority are stateless in Rakhine State. They cannot move freely without authorization, and they cannot access basic health care. UNHCR and the non-governmental organization Bridge Asia Japan recently launched a project that brings together 20 Muslim and Rakhine women for some vocational training classes. They're taught basic literacy, sewing skills, and are given health and hygiene education. Many of these women have either had no education or had to drop out of school to support their families. Leila Bagum is a single mother and a Muslim.
We didn't know them. We now have a very good relationship. I used to be afraid of them.
Mei Than Nui is from the Rakhine community.
I feel that working with these participants as if I had known them before. I would like to maintain this relationship after the class.
UN High Commissioner Filippo Grandi recently traveled to Myanmar for his first official visit to the Southeast nation. He visited several towns, including Mong Dao, where he met with the project participants. He noted that it was the first time that the Muslim and Rakhine women sat together and spoke to each other.
This is a very small little seed that you plant, but I think it's important.
According to UNHCR, last October, an estimated 20,000 people were displaced around Mong Dao in a security operation prompted by attacks on several border posts. Most have returned home, but some are still hosted by local villagers, pending an agreement on return and relocation sites. The situation in Mong Dao remains tense following the violence that was allegedly carried out by members of a militant group. Mr. Grandi appealed to communities in Rakhine State to unite in the face of fear and mistrust in underdevelopment. In response, the Muslim and Rakhine women who attend the vocational training classes promise to maintain their friendship beyond the classroom. Here's Mei Than Nui again.
It's important. It's better to have solidarity. If there is solidarity between communities, it's better for the country.
UNHCR is working on bringing more projects like this to Myanmar. The agency has helped set up a market in downtown Mong Dao where some 2,000 families of Muslim, Rakhine, Hindu and other minority groups shop for daily supplies and interact. Jocelyn Sambira, United Nations.
You've been listening to UN Gender Focus from the United Nations in New York, and you can follow more of our programs at radio.un.org. We're also on Facebook and on Twitter under UN Radio. Thanks for joining us today. I'm Matt Wells.